How you doing there? Welcome back to Babylon Talmud. Today we're studying Membeis, Daf 42 of Masechta Bava Metzia'ah. Friends, your friends. Let me tell you, Epis. Where are we? Alright, let me tell you, Epis. Parts of this daf are extremely, extremely geschmack. And parts of it I don't really understand. Fully, maybe. We'll get to it when we get there. But it should be a very pleasant job. Daf. Let's go right to it. Okay. Says the Mishnah, Daf Membeis, Omer Aleph. Hamafkin Mos Eitzel Chavero. Shimon deposits money with Ruvain. Soron Vivshilon Lachorov. And then Ruvain takes the money and he bundles it up and he maybe puts it like in his satchel and throws it over his shoulder. Oshimisarim Livno Levito Aktanim, or he gave it to his son or his daughter who are minors. Vino Bifneim Shilokaroi, and then I guess locked it with them, but improperly. Basically the point is he was irresponsible. So Chayv, Shiloshom Kiderech Hashomim. He's Chayv, if anything happens to it. Because he wasn't guarding properly. What's going on? I feel like, hopefully there's no problems here. But if there is a problem, I have my backup recording. I haven't had to use it yet. I'm a little bit nervous. Like, I don't really want to use it because the quality won't be as good. And also, I don't know how I'm going to sync the video with the sound. But, all right. Anyways. I have my backup. It helps. It helps to know that I have a backup just in case there are problems with the audio. But if he push it, if Itake did watch the way that the custodians watch, like the industry standard watching, like the industry standard for watching, well then he's potter if anything happens to it. Alright, fine. Bishlama says the Gemara Kulu Shiloshimir Kedere Hashemrim. Okay, fine. So I understand he gave it to his kids. He didn't lock the room properly. Okay, I get it. He was irresponsible. But I don't understand what's the problem with like putting it in like a satchel and like throwing it behind his back. I mean, I wear a book bag all the time. That's basically how I get around with stuff, you know, from going someplace with my computer or something, I throw it in my book bag, throw it by my back, and go fight. What's irresponsible about that? Omar Rove says Rove, Omer Bitzrok, Omer Krovit, Sarta Kesef Biodecho. Biodecho, Biodcho. Excuse me. Biodcho. Vitzarta Kesef Biodcho. It says by Meister Sheni, I think, that you'll bundle the money in your hand. Avopishet Zruin, even though they're bundled, Yeu Biodcho. They should be in your hand, not thrown behind your back. Okay, I guess that would have been considered, I guess in this context, to be somewhat irresponsible. You should be holding on to it if he's a custodian for them. The Omer Reb Yitzchok says, Reb Yitzchok, Le'olam ye'e kaspo shel udam motzui biyodo. A person should always have his money liquid. He should have money available. What does Rashi say? Rashi says, second line of Rashi, Motzu biyodo lo yafkidenu lacherim. You shouldn't deposit it with others, b'makom acher, who are some other place, she'im tizdamin lo schora liskor yehei mezumen lo. Right? That if he has an opportunity for a business opportunity to buy epis, he should have money available. Right? He shouldn't have all of his money tied up in a place where he doesn't have access to them. Shenemar is the pasuk says, v'tzayit ha-kesef biyodcho, that you should have the money available in your hands. Reb Yitzchok advises that a person should always divide up his money into three categories. Shlish bekarkev, shlish bepakmati, shlish tachas yodo. One third of his money should be invested in property. One third of it should be invested in business and in merchandise. And one third of it should be invested, you should have it available. It sounds like basically like I guess your portfolio. He's saying you should invest a third in real estate, a third in like, I guess like stocks, and a third should be cash. Something like that. All right. So interesting, right? I mean, a second ago he said that, what did he say a second ago? A person should always have his money available. And then he says, well, only a third of it should be available. Two-thirds of it should be invested. But you always should have money available so that if there's an opportunity, you can take advantage. Fine. Vamar Bitzchok says, Bitzchok, in Abrocha Mitzuye, Ele Bedover Asamu Min Ha'oyin. This is Gevaldig. That blessing is found in things that are hidden from the eye. Let's go weiter. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Yitzav Hashem itchos abrocha ba'asomecho, that the Eibishter will command with you a blessing ba'asomecho. I think it was you like granaries and stuff, but it means dover asomui min ha'ayim, things that are hidden from the eye. Let's go. We'll go weiter. We can discuss it in a minute. Tanaver Bishmol, Itonim Bismedish Bishmol, and abrocha mitzuy ela b'dover she'in ha'ayin choletes bo. That blessing is found in things that you don't necessarily see. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Yitzav Hashem itchos abrocha ba'asomecho. I think he's saying the same thing basically, that the Eibishter will provide with you a blessing in your the things that are hidden to you. Toner Rabbanon, and I think that this next bit kind of gives a little bit of explanation of what this could mean. Toner Rabbanon, aholich lamud es garno. So a person who's on his way to measure his granary, to see what he's got there, see how much inventory he has, see how much stock he has. So before he goes and before he measures it, so Omer, he says, Yiratzun mefonecho, Hashem Elokeinu shetishach brocha b'maisi yadeinu. May people, the will before you, God, that you should send blessing in the work of our hands. That he's on his way to kind of measure the sort of results of the work of his hands. And on before he measures it, he davens that hopefully, there will be blessing found. His chilamud, he begins to measure, Omer, and he says, Baruch HaShaleach Broche B'chui Hazeh, blessed is one who sends blessing in this pile. Modar V'acharkach Beirach, if he measured, once he's already measured, if now, once it's already measured, he blesses, when it's already counted, when it's already quantified, HaRezeh Tefilah Shav, at this point, it is a prayer that's in vain, L'fishein HaBroche Metzuyo, Lo B'davar HaShokul, Lo B'davar HaModud, because blessing is not found in something that is weighed or measured, Lo B'davar HaManu, or counted, Lo B'davar HaSomim, and something hidden from the eye, Shenemar, it says, Yitzav Hashem Itchos HaBroche Ba'asamecho, that the Eibishter will send blessing in the things that are, or in this context, in the things that are hidden. Yeah, I feel like, I guess, like, for me, like, I kind of understood this as, like, almost like if you're, like, counting your pennies kind of thing, you know, it's like, bless, you know, chill out from, like, the nickel and diming and, like, figuring out, did we get this one or that one or the other thing? Like, when there's blessing, you know, you're not, like, super focused on, like, you know, this or that, or, you know, there'll be lots of shefa, so much, right? Kichol ayom eshalo yusofer l'rov, right? Right, the Yidden are compared, right? Right, the blessing that the Eibishter gives to Avraham Avinu is not that you should have, this amount of offspring. You will have so many eshalo yusofer l'rov, they can't even be counted, right? So, I don't know, for me, that's like kind of how I understood it, right? It's like, blessing is not, if you can count it, then already it's limited, right? But the blessing is found on things that are like unlimited, right? Before you've counted, how measured your granary, when everything's in potential, when things have not yet been quantified, that's when there's a opportunity for blessing. And even while you're counting it, right? It says you start it, you could still bless, but like once already you've like put a number on it, then already it's limited in some sense. So God willing, we should all have so much blessing that it's uncounted and that it just kind of comes and is growing, and it's clear that clear to all of us that we have lots and lots of blessing, that we don't need a kind of nickel and dime and count, but that there's just so much of it and it's just flowing. Amr Shmuel says, Shmuel, Ksofim ein loim shmira elo bikarke. Says Shmuel, so money is only considered guarded in the ground, right? So when Shmuel deposits money with Reuven, Reuven needs to take that money and put it in the ground, store it away over there. That way it'll be safe. He buries it. Amarava says, Rava modi Shmuel, but Shmuel admits that Be'er Shabbos bin Hashmoshes, if it's right before Shabbos, Shimon stops by Reuven's house right before Shabbos and gives him money to deposits with him money, the lo atchuchu rabbanon, that he doesn't need to now go outside and start digging holes in his backyard, right before Shabbos. V'yishol motzoi Shabbos shir l'mikbarinu v'lo kavrinu. And if a motzoi Shabbos, he's sitting around doing nothing, And when he could be burying the money, and he's messing around for long enough that he could have buried the money and he didn't, mechayev, well, at that point, if anything happens to the money, then he's chayev because, you know, he's not guarding them properly. Now, if Shimon, the depositor, is a Tamur Chacham, who? So, Sovar, so then I can understand why Reuven didn't immediately bury it after Shabbos, because Sovar Dilmami Boile Zuzi Lavdalta, because Reuven thought, oh, well, maybe Shimon's going to come by and he's going to want his money for Avdallah to pay for wine and stuff, to buy wine. So, you know, if I bury it into the ground, it'll be inconvenient. So that's what, so then there's, and then he doesn't have to bury it immediately. Now, V'idno, the Shriche Gishoshoi, but nowadays, where the people know, the Shmendriks know, that, oh yeah, people put money in the ground, so they start looking for buried treasure. So in lam shmir el b'shmekora. So don't bury them in the ground anymore, because that's actually not going to be well protected. And instead, you should, you know, put them in your attic. You know, put them in the beams of your roof. Ve'ena d'shchichei promoi. But nowadays, that people know that the people keep money in their roofs, and they're poking around in people's attics, saying lo imshmira elo bene urve. So you have to keep them in between the bricks. Amirava modeshmo bekosel shmo says you can even put it somehow like in the wall, even if it's not like in the bricks or something. But now that there are people who know this and they start poking around the walls, saying lo imshmira elo betefach asomach lekarka, it's only considered guarded if you put the money in the wall, like close to the ground, or betefach asomach lishmekor, or close to the ceiling, to the roof, because that's where the wall is going to be strongest and people won't be able to poke through as good. Interesting. Om the Rav Achabre, the Rav Yosef, the Rav Ashi, Hosom Tanam. We learned by chometz. Chometz shenofla all of mapolas areu kimavur, that if you have chometz, and of course you have to destroy the chometz. What if you have chometz and then the house collapses on the chometz? So it's considered like it's already destroyed. Don't worry about it. You don't have to go after it. You don't have to find it. So long as a dog would not be able to access this chometz, so then don't worry about it. How much is considered where a dog would be able to get it? Gimel tvachim. Three tefachim, right? So if you have the chometz three tefachim deep in the, you know, buried, so then a dog would not be able to sniff it out and go for it. So hachamai, what about over here by money, right? When we said that you have to bury the money in the ground, how deep are we talking? Mibayin shlosha tefachim, does it need to be three tefachim like chometz? Oh, lo, or not. Amalei, so Vashi responds, also mishum recha ba'inun gimel tefachim ocho, mishum ichsuye me'ena lo ba'inun gimel tefachim. So Vashi says, by chometz, we have to make sure that the dog won't be able to sniff it out, so you have to bury it deep enough, and that's three tefachim. Over here, we're not concerned about the smells, we're concerned about a shmendrik finding it. So there, it just needs to be hidden. As long as it's hidden, even one tefach would be enough, as long as you can't see it. V'cham omer rafim misichra tefach, says rafim from sichra, we're talking about a tefach. Okay. Shimon deposited money with Reuben. Reuben took the money and put it in a willow hut. Now, the thing about a willow hut is that vis-a-vis thieves, it's considered protected. Okay, if the money is put in the hut, the thieves won't get it. But a hut is flammable, and therefore it's irresponsible to put the money in this willow hut, because it's considered something that's, I guess, you know, can easily burn down, and the money will be burnt down with it. So therefore, it's irresponsible. So even though it's protected from thieves, it's nonetheless irresponsible to put money in one of these willow huts, because it could end up getting incinerated. So Osvinu betzvifa du orbine. Nonetheless, Reuven put the money in one of these willow huts. Ignuv, and if they didn't get burnt down, which is the concern, they actually got stolen, which is not generally a concern in a willow hut. Amr of Yosef, it says of Yosef, afagadlin ganove nitirusahi, even though they were considered protected from thieves, and therefore this would be considered an ones, because it was protected from thieves, and even so, it got stolen. But nonetheless, it was still a negligent thing for Reuven to have done, to put it in a willow hut because there's a fire hazard there. So this is an example of Reuven initially being negligent, even though ultimately it wasn't his negligence that was the issue. It was an ones. Chayev, nonetheless, he is chayev, because tchilasu b'pshiyah v'sofa ba'ones is chayev. V'gadam, those who say afagadli nenura b'shiyusahi, some say fakert, that even though with regard to fire he was irresponsible, but the fact of the matter is it was considered in a protected area vis-a-vis theft. So therefore tchilasu b'pshiyah v'sofa ba'ones, initially, he was irresponsible because of the fire hazard, but ultimately, it got stolen, which was unexpected. Potter. Therefore, he's potter, because ultimately, it was something unexpected that happened. V'hilchisa, t'chilasu b'pshia v'sof b'ones chayv. The halacha l'maise is that t'chilasu b'pshia v'sof b'ones is chayiv. Interesting. Gavir the afkid zuzei gabi chavi shimin. Deposited money with Reuven. Omerle havli zuzoi. And Reuven then, and Shimon then says to Reuven, okay, I want my money back. And Reuven says, you won't believe it, I push it, don't know where they are. I forgot. I don't know where they are, push it. They came before Rava. And Rava says, look, Reuven, I don't know, is negligent. And therefore you have to pay Shimon the money for being negligent. Shimon deposited money with Reuven. Ashlaminu l'ime, and Reuven then forwarded the money to his mother. Ve'osvinu b'kartolisa, and she put it in a chest. Ve'ignuv, and they got stolen. And Rava says, I'm perplexed. How should judges judge this case? If we say to Reuven, you're responsible. You have to pay Shimon because you shouldn't have given it to your mother. But we learned the other day, Reuven's going to say that when Shimon gives me the money, the assumption is that he's giving it to me, and I can give it to my mother, I can give it to my wife, I can give it to my adult kids, right? That he's giving it to me to protect. I could have my immediate family also keep an eye on it. So Reuven says that there was nothing wrong with me giving the money to my mother. Neima lo deime. Okay, so if we confront his mother, Zili Shlimi, and say, okay, pay. Omer, she's going to say, wait, lo Omerli, delav didei ninu. I didn't know that this was not my son's money. I didn't know that this money was Shimon's money. The Akbrinu, that I should bury them as a custodian. So Neima le Amaylo Amartlo. So let's say to Reuven, why don't you tell your mother that it's Shimon's money and that she should bury it? Omar, Reuven says, well, I thought I was Taka doing the responsible thing by not telling her. Because Kol Shekin Dechi Amino La Dedidi Ninu, Tfei Mizdarabu. I figured, look, she doesn't care about Shimon. I'm sure she does. But her son, if she thinks that I'm depositing all this money with her, I figured that would be the better protection. I say, okay, can you watch this for my friend, for Shimon? Okay, she'll watch it. But can you watch it for me? Then for sure she's going to take care of it super good. So what do we do? Right? It's like look, it was an unfortunate situation. The money was stolen. Nobody was particularly irresponsible over here. Reuven was allowed to give it to his mother. He also didn't tell her that it was Shimon's because he Dafka thought that would be a better, she would take care of it better. She says, look, I didn't know it was Shimon's. If so, I would have buried it like I was supposed to, but I didn't know it was his. I was guarding it in the way that I thought was best. But, I didn't bury it. It then got stolen. So, where am I? So, Amar Rav, so Elo Amar Rav. So says Ravi, Mishtaba iu dehanu zuze ashlaminu li'ime. Okay, so Reuven Pashut swears that he gave the money to his mother, which he was allowed to do. Umishtaba ime, and his mother swears, Da'anu zuze osvinu bikartalisa v'ignuv, then she swears that she put the money in this chest and she was watching it, v'ignuv, and they got stolen nonetheless, ufater, and then they are both potter. So now this next example is an interesting example. I can't say that I totally understand the maskana, but alright, who knows, maybe we'll get some clarity on it in the future somehow. Maybe as we learn more of Bava Metzia and understand things better, maybe we can make more sense of this. But it's an interesting scenario nonetheless. How apetropi de yasme. Okay, so they were orphans, right? They were orphans, and who's going to take care of their estate? So the court appoints a apotropis, a representative, who's going to represent them. Okay, so apotropis, the asme, there was this apotropis, this zovan lehu Torah li asme. Okay, and he bought for them a cow. Okay, fine. He bought a cow with their money, and okay, I guess that was considered something beneficial for them, and that's what he did. Umasra le bakore, he gave it to a herdsman, I think maybe a cow watcher guy, a guy who takes care of cows. Lo avale kochi vishine. Now, what was peculiar about this particular cow, it had no teeth. Lehava kochi vishine lemechol. He posher couldn't eat. There were no teeth. Vamis, and predictably it died. Now what? Amarav bar Chama says, "Amarav bar Chama, echi nidai nidayon elaydi." Now, how should the judges judge this case? Neima lelapetrope. If we tell the apetrope, zil shlim, you're responsible. You have to pay back the orphans, the estate. Amar anu levakor masarte. Look, I gave the cow to a cow watcher guy. I gave it to him because I'm not the expert over here. I gave it to him, said he would take care of it. And he failed on that mission, on that responsibility. Namely, the vakor is zil shlim. Okay, so if we go to the cow watcher guy, say, okay, you were irresponsible, you have to pay. Omar onaba de Torah akamte. He says, look, I treated this cow like I treated every other cow. I put the cow together with all the other cows. Ochla shadoile. And I threw food in front of all of them. There was plenty of food to eat. Lohava yodinon de lo ochal. I didn't realize that this particular cow wasn't eating. Look, my responsibility is I take the cows, I treat them all equally, I make sure that they're fed, that they have what they need. Well, I didn't realize that one cow wasn't eating. All right, fine. So what do you do? What do you do? You know, you confront the apotropis. He says, look, I did what I was supposed to. I gave it to a responsible cow watcher guy. And you go to the cow watcher guy. He says, well, I did what I had to do. I gave them all food. They're well fed. I didn't realize that there was one particular cow who wasn't eating and then suddenly dropped dead. So, michdei. So, let's see. Bakoro, shomesoch di asmiu. Well, the cowherdsman guy is taken care of, is being paid to take care of the cow. So, he's a shomer socher. Ibarle layune, as a shomer socher, somebody's being paid to watch the cow. He needs to pay attention. It's his fault. So Gemara says, you're right, but here's the thing. Look, if the orphans actually in fact did lose out, then you'd be right. But that actually the orphans are just fine over here, because they found the initial seller, the cowmonger who sold them the cow to begin with. And they said, hey, you sold us a cow without teeth. That was an improper sale. Give us our money back. And they get their money back. So the orphans are fine. If the orphans weren't fine, then yeah, they'd be able to go after the cow watcher guy. But the orphans are fine. They got their money back from the cowmonger. Elaman katoin. So then who's making a claim over here? Mari de Torah katoin. The cowmonger. The cowmonger was just forced to give the money back to the orphans, the cow that he sold him is dead, and he's in a bind. So he's coming to the apotropis, and he says to the apotropis, Yiboyle lo duon, that you should have told me that I sold you a cow without teeth. My moda inale. What do you mean we have to tell the cowmonger? Didn't the cowmonger, I mean, how does he not know that the cow that he sold doesn't have any teeth? That should be pretty obvious. Well, he's a broker. He's buying and selling all the time. It's not like he like raised and put his heart and soul into this cow. And how did he know that it did not have teeth? He bought the cow that morning. He sold it that afternoon. He deals with bulk. You know, he doesn't know exactly what's going on with every single cow. So here's what I don't understand. So like, I figured like, so what? Like, if he's selling something, shouldn't it still be his responsibility? That's what I don't like. I would think like it's his fault. He should be responsible for selling something faulty. But the Gemara doesn't say that, which is, yeah, that's why I kind of feel like, I don't know. I feel like I have to understand this a little bit better. I feel like there's a lot of details here. Anyways, Hilkach Mishtaba Iu Telo Ava Yoda. So the cowmonger swears that he did not know about the toothless condition. Umshalim Bakarit May Basu Bizol, and the cow watcher guy pays the cowmonger, but not fully. He pays 2/3 the value, right? The value of cheap meat, 2/3 of the price. Maybe it's because, I mean, Rashi talks about how this would be compared to the scenario that we had maybe last week about Shimon rents his cow to Reuven, who then lends it to Levi. So we said that in that, and then, wait, what did I say? Shimon, remember, all right, it's a confusing case, right? Just bringing it up already gets confusing. Shimon rented the cow to Reuven, who lent it to Levi. So we say if the cow drops dead, so Shimon is off the hook. And we said ultimately Rabbi Yossi says that Levi needs to pay. No, I'm sorry, Reuven is off the hook, right? The renter is off the hook because we treat him like a Shomer Sacher, he's Pater for Onis. Levi, the borrower, so according to Rabbi Yossi, who we paskin like, Levi, the borrower, needs to pay Shimon. So maybe like the idea is that, I mean, on the one hand, in our case, by the cowmonger, you could say he sold something faulty. But in this case, like, he sold it to the orphans, but the orphans already got back their money. So like on the one hand, like this whole thing, right, the root cause over here is the cowmonger sold a faulty product. But that product, right, that cow was sold to the orphans who then kind of sent it off to the cow watcher guy to watch. So now it feels like it's between, so it's no longer about, I don't know, maybe somehow like the sale between the cowmonger and the orphans kind of goes away because the orphans are out of the picture, and now it's just like sort of the cowmonger and the cow watcher guy figuring out amongst themselves, I guess. I don't know, something like that. Anyways. So this one also is like a, I don't know, like a, there's like a detail over here that I'm like a little bit wishy-washy in as well. But anyways, haugav the afkid kshus agabe chave. So Shimon deposited hops with Reuven, hops for like making beer. Havle the dide nami kari the kshusa. Now Reuven had his own pile of hops. Omle the sarsei, and Reuven says to his attendant who works in his brewery, mihai rumei, look, take from this pile, meaning his own pile, take from this pile, also remame idach. But what the attendant did was, he ended up using Shimon's hops, the hops that were deposited with him. Says Ravam, what do we do over here? If we tell Reuven, you're responsible to pay Shimon for the hops. Omer, ona amile, me hire me. He says, what do you mean? I did what I was supposed to do. I told the attendant, take from this pile, from my pile. Namely, the Sarse, but if he says to the attendant, Zil Shlim, okay, so you pay Shimon. Omer, lo.
Omar le, oh, I'm sorry. So Omar, so the attendant responds, he says, I'm not paying. Lo Omar li mehai remi mehai lo tir me.
Reuven never told me, take from this pile, don't take from that pile. So if I didn't know Davka not to take from that pile. So now here's the thing that's a little bit funny. Okay, I think what it's saying, maybe, I don't know, I might be like missing a detail here, is that if the attendant kind of took enough time adding the hops to the beer, it was more time than it would have taken. Here's the thing. Shimon's pile, the deposited pile, was closer to like the brewing situation than Reuven's hops pile. So if the attendant, it took him the amount of time that it would have taken to get to Reuven's, to Shimon's pile, the deposited pile, and then and add it to the brewing stuff. And I guess the point is that Reuven acknowledged that it was not enough time for him to have gotten to his own stuff. So clearly then it must have been from Shimon's and Reuven didn't care, right? Again, so v'idisho shir le'isuye le' v'lo aisile. Sorry. It's fakert. If his own hops were closer, hops were closer, and the attendant took longer than it would have taken to have gotten Reuven's hops, and Reuven didn't say anything, meaning that I guess the assumption is that Reuven knew that he was walking over to Shimon's hops that were further away, and he didn't say anything. Well, then Reuven's basically acknowledging that he's using Shimon's hops, and that would be problematic. Right, so again, if it took long enough for the attendant to get the hops, that was more than enough time for the attendant to have gotten the hops from Reuven's hops. Velo aisile, right? He didn't bring it within that amount of time. So then Gali adaite dinichale. So then, if that's the case, then Reuven is basically acknowledging that the attendant is taking the hops from Shimon's hops, and if Reuven doesn't say anything about it, well, then I guess that would be a problem. So it's b'delo shah, but I guess somehow he didn't take that. I don't know. What does that mean? Like, it didn't take that much time. Maybe he moved quickly or something? I don't know. So I guess, basically, I guess Reuven, there was no reason for Reuven to have, like, realized that Shimon, that the attendant was taking Shimon's hops. So again, so like, what do you do? Back to the original question. Reuven had told the attendant, take from his pile, from this pile. The attendant says, yeah, but you didn't say don't take from the other pile. So what do you do? So we say, though, that sof might say the ikah. We say, wait a second, people, at the end of the day, who cares? V'aka mishtar shele, he's making beer with it. So who cares? Reuven's making beer. He used hops. At the end of the day, he used the hops for a productive purpose. He now has beer. Okay, fine, so he used Shimon's hops. So replace them with his own hops. Like who cares? You know, if Shimon had like a kilo of hops over there and Reuven's attendant took the hops from Shimon's, not from his own, and put it in the beer, like, oh, darn, oops. Okay, let me just take hops from my pile and I'll just put it in Shimon's pile. Like, who really cares? So I'm going to have some bray derava dahava shikra chala. Well, unfortunately, the batch didn't work out so good. The beer became vinegar, and he didn't actually benefit from it. Rav Ashi Amar b'kise, Mishalim le d'me kise. Alternatively, maybe I think what it's saying is that Shimon's hops weren't very good hops, so therefore, like, they weren't, it didn't really create such a good beer. So. I guess it would have to be replaced to Shimon, and I guess the question is, who's responsible to replace that value? Right, because like it didn't work out ultimately. So Shimon just Pasha needs to be paid back. And who's going to pay him back is the question. I don't think we actually answered, though, what the answer is, right? Yes, I guess I'm not like super unclear like who actually pays. It sounds like, okay, so Shimon would have to get paid back. But again, if you say to Reuven to pay, he's going to say, well, I told him not to take it. If you say to the attendant to pay, he's going to say, well, he didn't tell me not to take it. So it's, I guess maybe it's like unresolved. Is that the correct way to answer it, to understand it? Peace.